And now, fueled by facts and driven by truth, broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Gary Simpson and Ron Gray.
That would be us, Ron Gray.
That's a great voice.
Live it in person, yeah. Breathing.
But that voice is down in California, which is why I'm here.
That voice abandoned us. And I'm not sure it was on good behavior that we let him out, Ron Gray.
Oh, it is Harry O'Neill
after all.
He needed therapy.
So we should come back rested.
He'll come back tanned. And remember, Jim Lauder went down to Cuba and came back tanned.
That's
and
true.
Good.
So how come we're still stuck up here in the rain?
Yes.
Something's wrong with this picture,
Harry,
Ron Gray.
We've got to have an executive meeting about what's going on here.
Okay, we'll put it on the agenda for Monday's production meeting. Yeah, first and foremost.
And so what's going on in the world?
Well, we've got a big show tonight. We've got lots of topics. I mean, things are happening here in Canada. Of course, we've got an election brewing.
I heard a rumor about that.
Just in case you were having a withdrawal. From the last election, that wasn't very long ago,
And there's another one coming provincially, probably, in the fall.
Yeah, we are just so democratically inclined in this nation. We just love to go to the polls. But we're going to talk a lot about that.
Hey, Roadkill Radio had a scoop last week because...
Wait a minute. Don't act surprised. Of course Roadkill Radio had a scoop.
I know, but the audience needs to know when we do these things. We had John Cummings on, and he told us he was thinking seriously of seeking the leadership of the Conservative Party in British Columbia. And today he has announced that that is indeed what he's going to do. Yesterday, one of the downstream media, said they thought that he might.
Well, they're way behind the game, as usual.
They were well behind us. But the thing that annoyed me about the way the media covered his announcement today is they immediately began talking about vote splitting. What vote splitting? The fact is, the reason that half of Canada stays home...
Wait a minute, Ron Gray. Wait a minute. Let me pretend to be downstream media.
Oh,
Let me go to the file and get my script for what happens when there is a new election.
Oh, all right.
And a new political
party. Yes.
Oh, okay. Script. What is this? 220 we'll just read from? Oh, always make sure that you place fear into the voting hearts of the public.
Fear.
Talk about vote splitting often. Loudly. Doesn't matter that it's not relevant. Is that what we're talking about?
That's about it. And they're doing it. They're following that script.
They found the script so fast, eh?
They keep it close at their elbow.
But wait a minute, Ron Gray. Explain something to me. Vote splitting? The vote was already split. 50% of the people didn't show up to go vote.
Well, actually, what they call vote splitting, we call democracy. In Cuba, for example, there is no vote splitting.
Yes.
In North Korea, there is no vote splitting. You get one party to vote for, and that's it. We have several parties to vote for, and you choose the one that comes closest to your values, your principles, and you support that. And then we all agree to live peacefully under the result.
But wait, does the script provide for the fact that maybe, just maybe, that 50% that stayed home and didn't vote did so because there wasn't a political party, no political playground that they wanted to go play in? Is that a possibility? Wait.
It's very nearly a certainty.
You mean by the emergence of the BC Conservative Party or the BC First Party that people may find a political home that they can tolerate, that they want to go and support, that they might vote for Ron Gray?
Well, Carrie, this violates democratic principles, but I'm going to ask you, how did you vote in the last election?
I went to the polls.
Yes, you did. You did exercise your franchise.
I did exercise.
Okay, you're a good citizen so far.
And I looked at my ballot, Ron Gray.
And you said?
And I looked at those choices, Ron Gray.
Tweedledum and Tweedledee.
The anticipation welled within my being. The excitement of being able to have one person, one vote, my say, my democratic voice being forever left an impression on a paper. I spoiled my ballot at that moment.
Okay. There is an answer to that. Now,
there was no political playground for Kerry to play in.
The idea of another party offering another political playground is an answer to ballot spoiling. It's not vote splitting. It's broadening the choices.
Well, and I do believe that a lot of those people that say, why, I'm not going to waste the gas, because God forbid if we waste gas these days in this province. I mean, you get carbon tax. That is if you have any money left over from paying for the gas. But no, I think it's going to rejuvenate the vote. I think it's going to call people out and give them a reason to get in the car and go to their polling station and make their voice heard. I think it's a good thing.
Well, I hope so. There are a few issues that, for me, are deal breakers with any party. If they haven't got the cojones to take a stand on some of the issues that...
Yeah, okay, I'll come back to the cojones. So.
if they don't have the courage to take a stand on some of the issues that are important to me, they will not get my vote.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen whether the provincial conservatives are going to step up to the plate and be courageous enough to deal with some of the really important issues. And those are things like the right to life and the prior authority of parents to choose how their children will be educated, and free speech in British Columbia.
Well, you know, to John Cumming's credit, when he was on the show, he was very forthcoming. Terry, we didn't mince words with John. I mean, we hit hard on those debates because those are issues that people want to discuss.
No,
those
I was listening at home. It was a good
It was. And John Cumming, to his credit, was very forthcoming in his responses. We'll have to get more out of him the next time, but we'll do that. But, no, I was giggling at the Cahoney thing. You know, you bring out the farmer in me sometimes, Ron, and you know, one of the things that we are so leadership deficient in this nation, and coming into the studio and before the show, we were talking about how wimpy political leaders are. It seems once they go to Ottawa or Victoria, you know, where is the leadership? Everybody's trying to appease everybody. The Supreme Court of Canada is just waltzing over our elected voices because our officials don't want to stand up to them. And the Cahoney thing, I mean, it's time to geld a few stallions at my place, but maybe we should.
Oh, yeah. And I know how. Oh. Get them elected to Parliament.
Yeah. That'll fix them, literally.
That will geld them.
There we
go. Betcha. Okay.
All right, we've got.
Onward.
Now that we've solved Canada's problems, people. We have a big show tonight. Good show.
Yeah.
You know, issues around the United Nation and its effect into our families keep popping up. So in a few minutes, we're going to have Paul Ferris from the Homeschool Legal Defense Association in Canada talking with us, Ron. And then a little bit later, a very important show, one that... The media, the downstream media, as we all know it here at Roadkill Radio, wants to ignore and pretend it doesn't exist. And that is the truth of what happens to many, many women after they have an abortion. And the second half of the show, I think, folks, is really going to be worth listening. Call up your family, friends, tell them to tune in, because this is going to be stories that you haven't heard before, because this is the silencing of the debate.
These are the stories that don't get told in public.
Yeah, and you're going to hear them tonight on Roadkill. So it's going to be a very special end half show, one that I've tried to sort of think, because the abortion debate for me is just so nonsensical. It just shouldn't be a debate. There should be no argument. You know, this nation should be about life. This nation should be about care and nurturing. And yet we have this really dark side to Canada. And we're going to shed a little light that I think will change the language of this debate.
Have you ever reflected on the fact that the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which Canadians seem to value above everything, but that our Charter of Rights and Freedoms says everyone has the right to life.
Mm.
Notice that it doesn't say every person, and that's good, because our Supreme Court, which you were speaking of earlier, has redefined
our beloved Supreme Court.
Well, they've redefined person so that a human being is not a person until it is born
and draws its first breath. Now you're putting that absurdity switch on in my being, Ron, and that's the exact kind of thing that I think Canadians are fed up with. But the
Charter says everyone. Well, there's
a one.
110,000 ones a year who are denied that right.
Yep.
Because of wimpy politicians.
There we go again. Okay, first up, and I understand that he's with us, Paul Ferris. Good evening, Paul. Welcome to Roadkill Radio.
Well, thanks, Gary. It's my pleasure to be here.
Let's give Paul a little volume here.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We're getting better. There we go. Carrie Simpson and Ron Gray here. We're getting echoes.
Paul, can you get a little closer to the mouthpiece?
Let's see, is that better?
Yeah,
that's
now we
better,
got you.
Yeah.
There you go.
So you hail from London, Ontario, do you, Paul Ferris?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well,
yeah.
And is it still snowing out there? Or you guys got flowers happening?
Well, we had some more melting today, and we can see most of the grass. We're not quite all the way there yet.
Well, I have to boast. I picked my first daffodils from my garden today, so I just have to tell you that. Now, Paul, the discussions here on Roadkill seem to keep embracing the United Nations, and it's become a bit of a phenomena to us, because why does the United Nations insist on getting so personally involved in issues as they relate to the family? It seems that there is a trend that's happening with the United Nations and with Canada, because certainly down in the States you at least have some resistance to this this assimilation of family into the United Nations mentality. But here in Canada, this is getting kind of concerning. It's popping up. We dealt with this a few shows ago when we saw the United Nations demanding that there be sex education brought into all the public education schools, all those kinds of things. Are you seeing that in Ontario as well? Is there any uproar about this?
Not enough uproar, in my opinion. We're certainly seeing this trend right across the country. We're a national organization, and I end up dealing with these sorts of issues everywhere. And I would go so far as to say Western civilization is really changing the way it thinks about families, and the United Nations is leading that charge.
Okay, now let's go to the Homeschool Legal Defense Association of Canada, because it's been my experience. I've always had the great privilege and pleasure of speaking to a number of homeschoolers at different conventions around the country. And you are a unique breed, if I can put it that way. You conformity and compliance just aren't among your strength of character attributes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because homeschooling is really in many ways a countercultural movement, because at a time when many governments, many individuals are wanting the state, the government, to take more and more responsibility for their children, or states and governments are taking more and more responsibility for children.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, because I was going to ask you. I sense that most people, most parents, most families have no idea what's really going on.
Yeah, it's sort of the slow trend in this direction, right? That's been happening for years. But the funny thing is, in the midst of this trend, you've got homeschooling, where individual parents are going in the opposite direction and saying, no, we're going to take personal responsibility for the education of our children.
And that's accelerating all the time, isn't it? It's a real trend, a movement away from the government indoctrination centers that we call public schools.
Or thought farms here on Roadkill Radio.
The thought farms.
Well, and you know, related to this discussion on the United Nations, one of the central positions that we take is not in saying that parents even necessarily should home educate, but that they should have the right to do that, and specifically have the right to choose what their children are going to be taught, rather than the state saying you have to learn this subject in health or this subject in history.
Well, Paul, but I think one of the reasons that a lot of parents remain willfully unaware of this option for their children is that in more and more Canadian families, both parents are working. And for them, the public school system has simply become a routine weekday babysitter. It's the thought farm where they send their children, and the children are babysat to age of 18, and then they're shuffled off into the higher thought farms, which we call our universities.
Yeah, I would certainly agree, Ron. We have sort of these two interesting trends, and one is that I just don't think most parents realize what goes on in public schools today and many of the values that are taught, and in fact would be shocked if they knew that. But certainly the second factor is that it's much more convenient if you have two parents that work, and if both parents are at work all day, would they do with kids at home?
I wonder if we reduced the tax burden on Canadian families, how many would choose to have only one income earner and then maybe have the other parent educating their children at home?
What's interesting, I can't remember the stats, but in the, I believe it was the last federal election when one of the issues, perhaps it was two ago, when one of the issues was this universal child care plan that the Liberals had. And it looks like this is coming around again. But one of the stats I saw, and I can't don't have it at my fingertips here, but said that many families, if they had the financial ability, would much rather have a parent at home.
Mm-hmm.
But they just don't feel that they have the financial ability to do that.
We did a couple of surveys. I've got them at home, and they were remarkably consistent on that. One survey said 77% of mothers who work outside the home, and the other said 78% of mothers who work outside the home said that they would stay home and raise their own children if they could afford it.
Yeah, and it, I know I'm ranging a little bit off topic here, but this is where I personally have such a hard time with the plan of, you know, alleged universal daycare, because it's really anti-choice. It's not what parents want, and we're taking that choice away from them.
Well, and if the government is funding that, that's an additional tax burden, which, again, forces more people to go out to work to pay the tax man.
Yeah,
and then they've got to farm their children out again. Yeah, that's a vicious cycle.
Paul, I'm curious because we're seeing all these various movements that continuously put pressure and stress on families. We talk about universal daycare, yet the public education system in Ontario and here in British Columbia has now embraced, you know, all-day kindergarten for four-year-olds, which, you know, is just a really nice way of saying daycare. You know, the state-funded daycare, we're just not going to call it that. We're going to call it learning by play, you know. But these trends, and going on to what Ron's saying, you know, I sense not only on the issues of family, but on so many other issues, there's a little bit of a revolutionary spirit coming across Canada, I think, where people are just fed up saying enough is enough. I mean, we know that this two-parent working, you know, till all hours has just contributed to the demise of family and has not served the interest of children, has not served the interest of families, of women especially. I mean, as their heart disease rates go up and cancer rates and all the rest of it. Are we coming to a time where people are just going to say enough is enough, we want options? Quit giving our money away to special interest groups. Quit giving our money away to daycare. If, you know, I raised four children on my own. I didn't expect anybody else to raise my kids or pay for the raising of my kids. And I'll be damned if my grandchildren are going to pay for somebody else to raise somebody else's kids because they don't want to take care of them. I mean, I think there's becoming this sort of black and white issue. We're no longer this nice generation, because those of us that have always been generous and giving have been just taken advantage of and played for a fool. Do you sense this at all within the homeschool community and a broader sense in the community that's expanded beyond that?
It's a really interesting question. I would say yes. I do think we are getting a bit of that trend, especially with a bit in Generation X, but especially I think in Generation Y, there's this sense that the families that have perhaps been, I don't want to say abandoned, that's maybe too strong of a word, but that there's something missing when you don't have a family. And I think increasingly, especially young families, are looking for those relationships and looking for alternatives.
You know, I sense that too. The younger people who didn't have a parent stay home with them, they've missed out on a childhood, and now they're becoming parents, and they're determined that their children are going to have a different experience growing up.
Yeah, I think so as well.
You know, Paul, I spent the last 15 years traveling back and forth all across Canada. I met a lot of families that were homeschooling. One of the things that interested me is that when homeschooling is discussed, usually the first objection that is raised against homeschooling is, but how will you socialize the children? And I've got to tell you, the homeschooled children that I met in those families were the best socialized. They were fluid and flexible and able to interact with people from adults to babies with equal facility. They just felt at home in any kind of company. That is such a red herring. Do you still encounter that in the homeschool movement?
We do still get that question. Not so much anymore from anyone who's really informed on the subject. It's funny because back in the early days, say 30 years ago, people would say, well, of course it's better for socialization, but, you know, can you really get ahead on the academics? And I think that question has certainly, the academics question for homeschoolers has certainly been put to rest.
Yes, it has.
Every study that's ever been done has shown that homeschoolers do better academically. But we're seeing the same results sort of in the last 10 years on research on socialization. You know, when homeschoolers become adults, they are more likely to vote, more likely to have a job, more likely to volunteer in their community, more likely to play sports, more likely to be involved in organized sports. I mean, just about anything you can measure on the social scale, they do better.
Yeah, well, my question to people who raise the issue of socialization is, who do you want to have socializing your kids? You or a bunch of their age peers that hang out down at the park and smoke dope and steal hubcaps, you know?
it's so funny because we have this completely artificial situation in public school where you put people, children, with, say, 30 or maybe 25 if you're lucky, other students exactly the same age from the same area. And when in your life will you ever be in that situation again? I mean, you go to work, and quite possibly no one is your age. You've got people in a full age range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the school is really the artificial situation. So why would we think that that's an important skill to learn? Much better, like
that age stratification is in essence, is just people who don't know much about life pooling their ignorance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's look at the evolution of homeschooling then, because, you know, we have the benefit now of the track record, the as you say, the statistics and all the rest of it that we can draw on to prove our point. Yet we still see teachers' unions, for instance, vilifying the homeschooling movement. We see them threatening politicians that they have to cut this and make it illegal. We certainly see that with the United Nations movements about how can we, you know, get all the students to comply and be indoctrinated with the same line of thinking if we don't have access to control the information that they're getting and how they're processing that information. I know that on your website it says you guys have been to court. What are some of the court battles you've had to fight on this front?
Well, you know, you really get a bunch of issues, and the first, and I would like to think at least most common one, is simple ignorance, right? People that don't know about homeschooling, they maybe honestly believe it's illegal, or they maybe honestly believe that homeschooled kids are required to learn exactly the same thing as in public school. And so the result is that they start to harass, really, families that are homeschooling. And so we have to get involved to clear that up. The second, more disturbing trend that we sometimes see is where they just, and I would like to think it's not self-interest, but I'm concerned that it is, where they just don't like homeschooling. It's perhaps a threat to their own existence or a threat to the funding in their school. And they line homeschoolers up and they say, we don't want you to do this and we're going to do everything we can to stop you.
Yeah.
And not very often will end up in court. And the third real motivation that I see as well, and increasingly I'm seeing this and it's quite disturbing, is the actual indoctrination issue. They want to teach values to all children and they don't want to give anyone the opportunity of opting out of that.
Hmm.
Yes, we've had, well, we've got that in spades out here in British Columbia. Although I understand that...
heck, we're a leader in that. We make no bones about that.
Yeah, but Ontario's pretty close behind.
Yeah,
isn't?
I know.
And so is Quebec. So is Quebec with this.
Well, actually, Quebec might be inching ahead of BC now. They're getting pretty radical out there.
Yeah, Quebec's, in my opinion, definitely leading the charge because certainly BC's moving along this road very quickly. But in Quebec, they won't let you opt out. There's a court right now, or a case before the Supreme Court that we were sort of peripherally involved in for kids in public school wanting to opt out of the what they call the ECR course, the religious and ethics.
Yeah, we actually did a story on that here on Roadkill, and fascinating, you know, the draconian aspect of it, of, you know, no choice, no opt out. No ifs, buts, who's it's about it. You know, I mean, fascism at its best.
But we have that in BC, too, because the BC Teachers Federation about a month ago sent out a news release crowing about the fact that you cannot opt out of their
social justice program.
Yeah.
And the Corn Settlement Agreement produced this teacher's guide called Making Space, which instructs teachers at every grade level in every subject, from kindergarten to grade 12 and in every subject, how to incorporate anti-homophobic and anti-heterosexist instruction into the classroom. I remember Chris Kempling saying that when the BCTF first adopted that policy, he was a school teacher at that time, and he said his friend, the woodworking teacher, said, "I don't know how I'm going to comply with this. How do you teach homosexuality in woodworking class?"
Well, you get a wooden...
No,
actually, you remember, the wooden willy scandal. We broke that one. Remember where Saskatchewan was no longer using the wooden willy, so BC public education system brought them out here? I think there were 2,000 of them, to be exact. So there. You ask a question, I will have the answer, Ron.
Thank you, Carrie Simpson. I feel so much more enlightened.
And it's stories like that, Paul, that I'm sure contribute to the growing membership of your homeschool association.
Well, absolutely. You start to get ridiculous results in the classroom, and parents, I've had parents say this to me, you know, "I'm not sure I can homeschool, but I couldn't possibly do a worse job than this." Right?
Well, it's interesting that some of the statistics showed that not only do homeschooled children do better academically, but it doesn't depend on whether their parents have had any training in education. The fact of being taught by your parents is already an academic plus. That's an interesting piece of research.
Yes, indeed. One of the fascinating things, as I do this job longer and learn more about it, is realizing that home education is really a completely different form of education, to which many of the factors that apply in a public school system when we try to measure success just don't apply. And that is one of them. That the education of the parents... Well, here's the most telling statistic. We have consistently seen that whether or not a homeschooling parent has a teaching degree has absolutely no value or relevance on the educational outcomes of the child.
Right, yeah.
None whatsoever in any study has any been found.
You know, the other thought that occurs to me is the whole dynamic of the internet brings now to our worlds. I mean, and we're going to see the impact politically speaking, I think, in the this election and elections to come, the ability for people to communicate, but also, Paul, the ability for resource at your fingertips that can come into your home. I have my daughter-in-law, she's a teacher, had a baby, determined not to go back, so she's assisting with online teaching for a homeschool group out here in British Columbia. There's so many options now. There's so many ways of getting creative in the education of our children. Is this impacting the homeschool movement as well?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. It's becoming so easy to get good material, whereas that was a bit of a bottleneck and a bit of a limitation, even, say, 20 years ago. It really isn't today. I mean, if you go to a homeschool convention, you will see so much material, it'll make your eyes bleed. It's just crazy.
Mm. Options, options, options.
Yeah, almost too many options sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why we need to study decision making.
And I think that's a great point, that as the information becomes so available to us, the important thing to learn is not the actual information, but how to sort and find the right information.
Mm. How to think rather than what to think.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
But now, Paul, let us take you back again to the trend in the United Nations, because back in 1948, in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 26, Subsection 3, said very clearly that parents have a prior authority to determine the education of their children. But that was back in 1948. In more recent years, the United Nations is beginning to bring out a lot of, well, for example, the Declaration on the Rights of the Child undercuts a lot of that parental relationship. And I don't know, does it seem to you like the United Nations is trying to become a kind of super government and a super parent? I mean, Carrie Simpson has often said government makes a lousy mother, and
that wasn't me. That was the Supreme Court Justice Laforet, and he said, you know, the state has never proven itself to be a good parent. You know, one thing that mother government is good at, though, Paul, is creating so many problems that an industry is born out of it. The only problem with it is it requires our tax dollar to keep feeding it, you know.
And our children are the raw material
There we go, right? Future cash cows for bureaucrats. You know, but mother government on any front, I mean, our public education system is in turmoil, not doing what it's supposed to be doing. For, you know, one common denominator that we have within our civil society, if we want to call it civil, is the public education system. You know, but it's sure not producing, you know, what we want. You know, there has to be this willingness to recognize that we have a problem, a big problem, and I think probably one of the best things for the education of the future generations is that we're running out of money. I mean, you know, I mean, ironically, that's going to probably be the best factor in everybody saying, wait a minute, we need education reform, we have to cut the costs, we cut the costs, we cut the special interest groups, hopefully. Mind you, they may take precedent over the academics, I'm not sure yet. But, you know, this whole trend, and then you add to it, you know, these outside agencies like the United Nations, continuously we have to be vigilant. And that's what I want to pick up on what Ron said with you, Paul, because, I mean, your organization is about defending the rights of parents to choice in education. Yet all these outside factors continuously are attacking that right, and you're having to be vigilant in protecting that right. You know, you must be a busy guy.
Yeah, I speak at homeschooling conferences a lot, and one of the things I tell parents is we really do have to realize that we are countercultural.
Yeah.
We are taking a trend in the opposite direction of society, and so yeah, there are a lot of challenges in a lot of areas where it often seems like we're the only ones standing against it or saying this isn't a good trend. You know, in terms of the United Nations, there's so much that can be said on that subject, right?
Yeah.
But you've got, let's take the International Convention on the Rights of the Child. There's lots of good stuff in there. There's some very questionable stuff in there. But
the problems are exacerbated
because you have a committee on the rights of the child of unelected, appointed individuals that are receiving these reports from governments every 5 years on how they're doing at implementing the convention. And this group of people reports on whether they think they're complying or not. And in my opinion, often you see strong agendas in those groups.
Hmm.
But the problem so often to me is there is no real, quote, United Nations. There's all these committees that are filled with special interest groups that are unaccountable, unelected, undemocratic. And is it any wonder we have the mess that we do?
You know, and I wanted to follow up on the United Nations, you know, the provisions within that declaration. You know, yeah, some are really good. Some are sort of questionable, but there's some really bad ones, too. Mm. And all great deceptions, you know, I say are 90% truth. It's that 10% twist at the end that you got to really watch for. You know, and there's plenty to watch for in the Declaration of the Rights of the Child. But going to the unelected committees, where is our solution with this? And again, for my Roadkill Radio audience, they know I have this big pet peeve about our money being wasted on special interest groups, being vested into things that government shouldn't even be involved in. And when I see the United Nations moving in this agenda-driven direction by the special interest groups, and you know, we put a letter off to Minister Cannon recently, which he hasn't responded
to.
He
has not yet answered.
You know, dealing with issues about, you know, the mandatory sex education. And, you know, since when did public education become a convenient marketing tool for pharmaceutical companies, you know, which is exactly what we start dealing with here. Money does play a big factor in the decisions that are made about our children. The homeschool, I deal a lot, Paul, with child apprehensions. I know that social workers are trained to look sideways with suspicion, you know, if you happen to be homeschooling your children. You know, they automatically assume that you're isolated from the community, going back to what Ron was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, they're deliberately trained in ignorance, you know, and willfully so, I might add, because anyone who had half a brain could find the information, the facts, the truth, quite easily if they chose to do that. But there seems to be within our bureaucracies, you know, this mentality of willingness to buy into the lie. You know, a lot of homeschool families I've had to deal with the threats of apprehension, you know, if you don't put your children in school. We're also seeing issues in court where divorce and marital breakdown is happening. One parent wants to homeschool, the other parent says no. Do you deal with so many of those cases within your association as well?
Yeah, certainly. To the point where when there's a dispute over homeschooling, as between the parents and a government agency, it's more often Child and Family Services, or whatever it's called in the individual province, than it is actually the Education Department.
Hmm. Paul, does the Homeschool Legal Defense Association of Canada have any observers or NGO status at the United Nations, or do you get reports from organizations there?
Yeah, we certainly, in the past, we've been various times. We try to keep an eye on things and a bit of a pulse on things. You know, it's such a huge bureaucracy with so many reports and on so many different subjects that the task of just watching them is gargantuan.
That's probably the best recommendation it has to become the government of the world. It is that it is the biggest and most inefficient and wasteful bureaucracy that has ever been created by mankind.
How do you fight that? How do you fight something so illogical? Paul, I just want to do sort of a cross-country tour of homeschool-friendly provinces. Are there some that rate higher than others?
Yeah, there certainly are. BC, I would say, is probably a more homeschooling-friendly province. And you get different approaches to it, right? So you get a place like Alberta, which is overtly very homeschooling-friendly, but has a great deal of regulation. And I suspect I'm in similar company here when I say I sometimes fear regulation more than I do bad intentions on the part of the government.
Yeah, you probably get some agreement here.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, we were talking about values and social trends. It occurs to me that public education, as we have come to know it, is a relatively new invention in human history, that homeschooling really has always probably been the norm.
Yeah.
Historically, isn't that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, public school is really a social, experiment, you could say. That's really only been in the last century that it's gained ascendancy.
Yeah.
Okay, now going back to Alberta, so they're overtly friendly, at least on the surface. But when you start flipping through the pages, what kind of regulations are we talking about that would send my antennas up?
Well, here's an example that would be that has become routine in Alberta, but would raise concerns most places. Is they require two visits by someone in the school, what they call facilitators, to the home every year to meet with the child and go over the curriculum and everything else. Right. Now, at the moment, they tend to. There's another measure, which is that you can choose the school that you register with, or rather the board that you register with. But, you know, I think that's fairly intrusive to have someone have to meet the child and go into the home and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, we sort of have that out here when women have a new baby. The public health nurse comes in. It's always quite amusing to chat with young moms because they think the state's just being helpful until you tell them they're keeping notes on them.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. You get measures like that, and we are increasingly, you know, as a society and government, is increasingly distrustful of parents, of families.
Yeah.
But the problem is, when they're distrustful of families, that means that there's someone else peeking in on those people that has the strong arm of the government behind
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that we're trusting those government workers more. So why is it that parents who love their children aren't trusted, but some random worker from whatever government agency is completely trusted?
Even though the evidence is abundantly clear that, you know, I mean, anyone here in British Columbia would not trust a social worker, yet they are still to this day empowered with godlike powers without any accountability.
Yeah.
I remember Doris Darvishy sitting in this studio and saying, no social worker will ever love my child the way I do.
No teacher. See, we were talking about the teacher.
Oh, that was education,
yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got BC, we've got Alberta. How's Saskatchewan right on your chart?
Saskatchewan and Manitoba would be simple. You send a report in at the beginning of the year and a report at the end of the year. Then you get into Ontario, which is fairly friendly, simply a report at the beginning of the year. You move to Quebec, which I would feel quite fair in saying is openly antagonistic towards homeschoolers.
Mm.
We've been pretty much continuously in court at least the last year and a lot before that in Quebec.
Mm.
You move out from there and you get New Brunswick, which is fairly friendly. We've had some issues over the past year in terms of one district, but for the most part fairly friendly. Nova Scotia and Nova Scotia and PEI really are, again, fairly friendly, a little bit more regulation in the forums that I would like to see. And Newfoundland is, depending upon which district, either not bad or openly antagonistic.
It depends on the day, does it?
Yeah, well, they've basically got three districts out there, Western, Central, and Eastern. And Eastern and Western have sort of in the last couple of years worked out a program that most homeschoolers don't like. It's again, more regulatory than they would like, but it's something that they can sort of live with. Whereas in Central, no one ever gets approval, and pretty much it's reached the point that people don't even bother asking for it anymore. You know, it's ridiculous stuff. They want to check out the lights and ventilation in your home, and, you know, they want daily reports, and it's just...
Daily reports?
Yeah, in many cases.
Well, you got to keep the bureaucrats employed and busy, Ron, or at least the perceived notion that they're busy. Mm. Paul Ferris, what if Carrie Simpson had this amazing ability to say, Paul, I need you to fix the public education system in Canada. Where would you start?
Well, you know, it's interesting, right? Because again, the challenge is when you try to fix a system that big, you tend to be looking at top-down approaches. And I really believe that the solution is not top-down approaches. The solution is grassroots approaches, helping each family to raise better kids, to instruct their kids more efficiently, to teach their children values, to be teaching them the educational truths that they need to know, to be engaging politically. It's really the changes that are going to happen in the individual families that are really going to change the education system and change our country. And so really the only top-down options that I really see working are ones that strengthen the family and strengthen the family institutions.
Paul, you know, you mentioned the word value, and I know Ron has brought it up, but, you know, the values of the corporate elitists and globalists are very different from the grassroots movements of what I would say are the overwhelming majority of Canadians. We see a recent court case in England where Christian foster family is no longer allowed to foster because they don't hold the right values. You know, the current politically correct trend of embracing anything and everything as far as the bedroom practices go. Do you see this kind of mentality, something that not just limited to homeschooling, but everybody should be vigilant and start? Isn't it time to kind of stand up and say enough of this nonsense? And, you know, you go have your lack of values. I'm going to hold mine dear and true and first and foremost for my family. Are we at that place in Canada now?
Yeah, I really think we are. You know, I'm trying to remember. I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said, "The price of freedom is eternal vigilance."
Hmm.
And I really think that's true, that, you know, the trend will be negative unless good people, Edmund Burke, you know, the only the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men and women to do nothing, right? I really believe that,
but
when the
Paul,
good people do nothing, evil triumphs.
But, Paul, my answer to Edmund Burke is that if they do nothing, you cannot call them good men and women.
Well, that's probably true at a certain level.
Paul, you mentioned that you've been very active. Homeschool Legal Defense has had to be very active in Quebec, almost continually in court, I think you said. Is that primarily because of their new ethics and religious culture program? Has that been the sticking point?
As a direct result of that, I would say it's part of the same trend.
Mm.
Quebec is really in a point educationally where they are intolerant about enforcing tolerance, and really, we're really seeing the same attitude, I would say, in Quebec as we're seeing in many European countries, that they're trying to force everyone into the same shoebox. I mean, we get quotes out of Germany where they're saying they want to stamp out parallel societies. Well, that means everyone that doesn't agree with the state norms.
Mm. Wow.
Well, big job for Canadians that want and need to be vigilant. Paul, this time has just flown by. I certainly hope you'd be willing to come back on the show. Great to chat with you. Amazing discussion. I think we covered way more than what we anticipated with this discussion, but an important discussion, I think. And certainly tell people how they can get a hold of you, your organization. You've got an enormous amount of support systems available to parents, information for those that are considering homeschooling. What's the best way to get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, we want to do anything we can to help people with homeschooling, and our website is just www.hslda.ca, Homeschool Legal Defense Association.ca.
And it's on our homepage here at Roadkill Radio. I think you just click on and you'll be taken right there. Paul Ferris, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll have you back again. Thank you, Paul.
Sounds great.
Good night.
Okay, good night.
And now, as we approach the bottom of the hour, I'd just like to remind the listeners that they can call in and talk with us and our guests. The on-air telephone number is 604-525-4167. Or you can email the show at roadkillradio@live.ca. And we'd be happy to hear from you. And if you have questions for our guests or for Carrie and me, we'd be happy to entertain your questions, too.
You know, my mind's still going on our last guest, Paul Ferris, you know, because he opens up a whole can of worms here. I mean, that discussion isn't limited to education. That expands into all aspects of family life. You know, what decisions you're going to make for your children, what values are you going to instill in your children, what liberties are you going to be allowed to exercise with your children. You know, that's sort of like the canary in the mine.
How do you transmit the culture from one generation to another? And if we don't, we are only one generation away from barbarism at any time.
There you go. You dare use that word, huh?
I dare
you. Don't
use
tell
that word.
Justin Trudeau.
Oh, Justin. I'm sorry, Justin.
Oh, don't apologize. Tell him to grow up. So, Ron Gray,
yes, ma'am.
You enlighten me to a little gimmick that's happening on the Communist Broadcast Corporation the CBC, let's see. The CBC and
Mother Corporation.
And I sat there as you told me about how they were giving people of Canada this interactive voting helpful guide gimmick.
If you're too stupid to figure out how to vote, the CBC will help you.
Oh, we are so taken care of in this country. I'm going to sleep better tonight. So you happened across this compass.
Yes.
Now, see, I try to stay away from the CBC because it gets me going on tangents and other healthy things. This compass, when you were telling me about this compass, I'm sitting there aghast. I think you actually made me speechless. That's what we're dealing with here, people. Yeah. I know. Yeah, everybody, shock. Yeah, ha ha. Ron, explain to our roadkill rodeos what the CBC is doing.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I used to be a big fan of the public broadcaster. But see, I'm a geezer, and I remember back when they really were quite responsible about representing all parts of the country to all other parts of the country. That was their mandate. They had not entered into the brainwashing mode way back then in the 50s and 60s. But they have now. And what I discovered
is
when
that
I...
progression or regression?
It's regression.
I figured.
When I went and visited their vote compass, I discovered that this is 30 questions.
Wait a minute. Vote compass, people.
Vote compass.
Go to the CBC website. Go cbc.ca, vote compass, and it'll take you there. And there's a compass. You're going to be directed to how you need to vote.
You will be steered. And may I point out that since the broadcasters have decided not to allow Elizabeth May to participate in the leaders' debate, that there are now only 4 points on the CBC's compass. But there are 18 federal registered political parties in this country. I'd seen an earlier CBC program in which they observed this. They said, you know, we always talk about the 4 parties that are in the House, but there's 18 parties, and we're going to talk about some of the others. And then they began doing a program about Doug Christie's political party, which is the Western Independence Party. And you could tell that everything they're going to say about these other parties is going to be tongue-in-cheek, nudge-nudge.
Oh, do I get my script, my vote script out again?
This is a joke. You know, they're going to make a joke out of what, for many people, is a serious attempt to broaden the spectrum of political participation. So, you do these 30 questions, and then they'll give you a tick mark in one quadrant of their 4-point compass.
Now, to CBC's credit, and to Harper's discredit, issues like abortion actually appear on this survey.
They do talk about it, although only in terms of making it more accessible. I don't know how you can make it more accessible in a country that has no laws at all on the subject of abortion.
I mean, you make it mandatory.
Make it mandatory. I hadn't thought of
that. Come on, Ron. Get with this program.
China's
okay?
Way ahead of us. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, they do have that. They also have
euthanasia questions.
Euthanasia.
Same-sex marriage questions.
Yes, they do.
But they do frame it. When you go and look at this survey, people, look at the wording. Look at how it's couched. Not very clever, very overt, actually, in getting the desired answer.
Overtly pro, yeah, that's right.
There you go.
And look, I mean, not only does Stephen Harper not want anyone to talk about abortion in Parliament, and he has declared he'll do everything he can to prevent that, but yeah, now Kenney giving money to an organization to help gay refugees get into Canada.
Okay, now, this I need some help with, Ron Gray, because I mean, we spend billions of dollars on our refugee programs and our immigration programs, you know, supporting a whole ministry that's, you know, bureaucrats, helping officials, judges. I mean, this is an industry unto its own. And now we find 100,000 extra to get to the Rainbow Refugee Society.
It's another industry that has two raw materials, our money and people.
Well, no, it has three because it has our money, raw material, and we don't say anything. So there's three really important factors
Well, yeah.
And this is where, you know, now explain something to me, Ron, because I need help with this. Does the government possess the lawful right to spend our money willy-nilly any way it is? I thought there were prescribed taxes that they could only take advantage of, that there were only certain areas that they were required to administer. You know, yet it seems that our hard-earned tax dollars are just a free-for-all for anybody who wants to buy political favoritism from a group that is not going to get any favoritism from.
Carrie Simpson, you're getting confused. You've been reading the Constitution again.
Oh.
No, reading the Constitution would confuse you.
I should know this by now.
See, the
law makes no matter. Is that it?
The highest law of the land is our Constitution, and it says what jurisdiction each level of government has, jurisdiction each branch of government has.
Yeah, I'm with you so far. Okay. And that sounds pretty reasonable to me.
But when we implemented the charter in 1982, we said that the ermine-clad justices of the Supreme Court are the philosopher kings that Pierre Trudeau always wanted to have running this country.
And they operate at their whim and while, is that it?
And no one has the courage to stand up to them and say, you are intruding into other areas of jurisdiction that are not part of the court system.
Okay, but wait a minute, Ron. In defense of the Supreme Court of Canada, they haven't directed government by any law or case that I'm aware of that says you have to give money to anybody who asks for it and if you want to buy political favors. Have we tested in the courts whether or not some of these laws are legal? Are these taxes are legal? Are we interpreting right? Are they acting within the authority given to them within the Constitution?
We have never tested that. We have had, though, the Supreme Court reading into law things that Parliament never put there. And when they read it in, it becomes law because they are the final arbiters of what law is and what law means. And indeed, we've had the Supreme Court strike down things that Parliament has passed. So,
well, I have a letter, I think, that needs to be written, and that's, you know, under what authority did this $100,000 and all the other millions and billions of dollars that are just given away for political favoritism, where is the authority that allows these elected officials to do these kinds of things?
Oh, Carrie, my dear, the authority for that is in the fact that Jason Kenney knew there was an election on the horizon.
Is that all
and
it takes?
The automatic thing, if there's an election on the horizon, is to begin bribing the boobs with their own money.
The boobs.
The boobs. The cash cows. You bribe the cash cows with their own money. That's how politics is done in Canada.
Well, then all of us cash cows people better start getting together and have some herd mentality that just says, ain't going to flow no milk no more, you know? Speaking of flowing
would
milk.
Would be a good idea.
Maine passed a very interesting little resolution about raw milk.
The town of Sedgwick, Maine. One municipality.
Maine. Yes.
Yes.
And what did they say, Ron Gray? Do you remember?
Sedgwick Municipality says, regardless of what the federal or state government may say, within the confines of the municipality of Sedgwick, Maine. Anyone who grows food or processes food can sell it to anyone else as long as they have between them a contractual understanding. There is no liability for whatever the food is if you have produced it yourself.
They actually passed an ordinance called Our Local Food and Community Self-Governance. I love it. Langley, get together.
Let's do it in Langley.
This is number one. Producers or processors of local foods in the town of Sedgwick are exempt from license and inspection provided that the transaction is only between the producer and the processor and a patron where the food is sold for home consumption. How logical can you get? Can you imagine how much tax-paying dollars you're going to save because you don't need all these bureaucrats licensing and regulating and taking you off to court?
And inspecting.
I just...
Yes.
bravo to Maine. I love it.
I do too. And it's a real blow for freedom. The person who reported that story pointed out that this piece of legislation passed by the municipality of Sedgwick, Maine, is very likely to be challenged and struck down at some point. It has become the practice that in municipal legislation, anything you do that increases supervision and registration and
regulation.
Bureaucracy and regulation will be upheld. Anything that decreases it will be struck down.
Yeah. Go figure that, folks. I think we see a pattern that needs to be changed here. And speaking of being struck down, there was another interesting story, and we got to go quickly because we have our next very important segment that's coming up. This is a little story about a little girl with a little pink pistol.
Yeah, that was in Florida.
It was in Florida.
Yeah.
And you know what? You didn't read too much about it in the mainstream media, but a few Roadkill Radio fans put us onto this. And this is a very efficient way of dealing with things. And we found the story on Gun Owners of America. But it seems that the intruder that tried to break in and beat up and rob this young lady and her boyfriend met more than what he has expected, because when the boyfriend heard the ruckus after she opened the door at 3 in the morning, which is kind of strange to me, but anyway.
He naturally moved to defend his fiancée.
And she naturally moved to retrieve her little pink pistol.
It really was pink. I saw a picture of it.
And needless to say, the situation was resolved very quickly. The intruder was dealt with in a definitive and final matter, and didn't end up costing taxpayers anything for courts or housing somebody in jail or all those other expenses that go along when we decide not to allow people to definitively defend their home.
Direct action beats legislation every time.
Well, you know, and it raises a whole bunch of issues. You know, it raises the issues of personal property rights, our right to defend our family, our rights to defend our home, our rights to protect ourselves, Ron. You know, this is the story, the kind of story that, you know, the left bleeding hearts don't want people to know about.
Well, and also the statistical information that Gary Mauser at Simon Fraser University is very, very well informed on and brings it to the public, that in most cases, the use of firearms prevents crime. Hmm. When citizens are armed and properly trained in the use of those arms, and I think that's an important factor, the National Firearms Association, in fact, has a plan for training people and licensing them so that they can be safe owners and users of firearms, so that they can exercise not only the right, but the responsibility to defend home and family. And we need that kind of legislation in Canada to permit, because look, you're out in Langley, right? What happened to
I was out in Langley.
What happened to someone breaks into your house? You know, a home invasion sort of
thing.
They
don't walk out.
Well,
it's very simple.
Okay, because you are prepared. But for most, especially seniors, but for most Canadians, if someone breaks into their house and begins beating them up, all the police can do is to give you a case number after the event.
Well, after the fact.
In order, if you survive, then you'll be able to file an insurance claim. But there's no way they can get there in time to help you. If you're there, you should be the one who protects that private residence.
Well, this is a debate that has to be resurrected. And actually, going back to your CBC Compass, there is a discussion about whether or not the long gun registry should be scrapped. But the debate needs to take on a more educational value on this. And we need to look at the facts. And I think with the crime rates, the amount of people, homes that are being invaded for drug addicts and all kinds of things, this is an important discussion that needs to happen.
It's not just the long gun registry. It's also pretty pink pistols or honkin' big 45 caliber.
Honkin' big.
Yeah.
Which one do you want, the pink pistol or the honkin' big?
You know what? I read once in a gun magazine about what I think is probably the ideal weapon for home defense. It is a five-chambered revolver, and each chamber holds a 410 shotgun shell. I think that would, first of all, your aim wouldn't have to be very good.
Which would be helpful.
Because shotgun shells scatter pretty well. You know, but there's something easily portable. You don't have to have good aim. It's got lots of power, and
it makes a statement.
It makes a statement, and that statement will be heard.